This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea, and I'm joined by Adrian Martini. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm right here in lovely Oneonta, New York.
Nice, nice. Has summer arrived there yet?
Oh, with a vengeance. It went from pretty much winter to 90 degrees.
Yeah, so the East Coast specializes in doing that.
It really does. It's our thing. You know, we all have to have a thing. This is ours. Yeah, I went for my first heat, hot, humid, gross long run on Saturday. Uh-huh. Wish I'd left an hour earlier than I did. By the time I got home, I was just a drowned rat, apparently. Just kind of lay down on the floor for a while. So,
oh my gosh. Well, I am entering the oven, so to speak. As we record this on June 1st, I am flying tonight on a red eye to Maryland so that I can MC the Zuma Annapolis race. I'm very excited to go back to there. And I am staying in Chevy Chase with my best friend from high school, who I'd give a shout out to, but I don't think she listens to the podcast. but I am then on Sunday evening having dinner with a couple of mother runners, including Jen Rucker, who I know does listen to this podcast. So, whoa, whoa, Jen. And with our role mother triathlete with Sarah Wassner Flynn. And then a guy friend of mine from way back when and his wife.
You know guys?
I do actually have. It's funny. In my previous life, I was friends with more men. So carryover from when I was a kid, who I was up until fifth grade, I only had one friend who was a girl, and I had just tons of friends who were boys. Yeah. I was a little bit of a tomboy back in the day. So yeah. So what have you been knitting of late?
Well, I currently have two projects going. Mm. I am working on a Fair Isle scarf.
No way.
Which is, okay, Fair Isle means please. Two colors.
To me, Fair Isle is like the, I did not know that. It's, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and in Connecticut, enough
right.
said. I know
so
from Fair Isle sweaters.
Yes. Yeah, it's that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a super long scarf, mm-hmm. and I'm using a yarn that I absolutely love, mm-hmm. That has some cashmere in it.
Ooh, soft.
I know. All the knitters are like, ooh, that sounds great. But it's a project that's probably easily going to take me for the rest of the year. I kind of do a little bit of it and then put it down and do something else.
Do you knit less as the weather heats up?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do, because I'm a wuss.
Because I assume that knitting is a little warm because you got all that wool yes. sitting in your lap for the yes. wool cashmere blend.
I mean, but here, that's really only, there's maybe 2 months where
about
it's
5 minutes.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it feels like about 5 minutes where it's really too warm to have all of that all over you. Uh-huh. And then it turns, so
it's kind of ironic though, because as a needle pointer, I actually find that I needle point less in the summer, and it's not like I hold, you know, I have a bag of right. all my materials next to me. They're not in my lap. I mean, the canvas is, but it has holes in it, so it's ventilated. you know, I sort of feel like I should be doing more of it because it's longer daylight hours.
Well, you also have other stuff to do in the summer,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So you can actually be in your yard and... Mm-hmm.
Right,
do
right.
that stuff.
Yeah, I find that my thing I like doing lately is reading on our front porch in the evening.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, and because then, you know, the family sounds are very muffled when you're out
right.
there.
Right.
And we're driving back from Central Oregon, and I was like, oh, and Jack was driving. I thought, oh, I should have brought my needlepoint because I like needlepoint in the car because the light's really good. But I was like, oh yeah, no, I guess I don't really needlepoint very much now that it's summertime. And so
yeah, that's just the natural rhythm of crafting. You don't do it as much in the summer when you have other stuff that you're doing. So
the ebb and flow of crafting.
The ebb and flow of your craft. Yeah.
So, and what's your second project that you're working on?
The second project, it's actually a skirt.
Get out of here!
It's designed actually by a Pacific Northwest knitting designer.
Hippie.
Well, there are a lot of them out there.
I was going to say, that's redundant.
Yes. But I met her at a knitting retreat and got to try the skirt on. And I never would have thought that I would be knitting a skirt.
Mm-hmm. I never would have thought it either, to tell you the truth.
I'm totally with you. I am with you 100%. But I tried it on and I realized that it made my behind look absolutely fantastic. So
love that.
I'm like, this looks fun. So
I think you need to send me a link to that, and I will hyperlink to it in the description. But you have been, speaking of hot weather and running, you have been in a place that it's much warmer. You've been out in Florida with your mother. So how is she doing, and how did you feel about your running getting sidelined for about a week? Talk to us about all that.
Yeah. It got a little more intense than I'd anticipated. I went down because my mother lives in Lee, Florida, which is near nothing.
And that's not capital N, like it's a town called nothing.
No. I mean, it's nothing. It's very scenic, but nothing. The closest town is Valdosta, Georgia, which is still 45 miles away.
And which still doesn't ring any bells. My apologies to the people who live there.
Valdosta is actually quite nice.
I have no doubt it's nice. It's just, it doesn't have quite the name recognition as, say, a Chicago or a Detroit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I fly into Jacksonville, and then it's an hour and 45-minute drive from there to my house.
Okay.
So she just had to have, not just, but she had to have a heart catheterization because she had a weird little blip on a stress test. Mm-hmm. And we all thought, well, they'll just go in, they'll do that, they'll look around, maybe put a stent in, call it a day. Good enough. And she'll be back later that afternoon. Well, what happened was, and then I would fly out the next day. So what happened was they got in, they looked around and said, you're going to need a quintuple bypass.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you only had four chambers of the heart.
See, that's what I thought too. So he showed me a diagram and I said, yep, that would be quintuple.
Wow.
So that kind of changed the circumstance quite a bit. So she had the bypass the next day.
Wow.
And I've rearranged everything so that I could be there pretty much then for the rest of that week. And then I absolutely had to get home. So now she's doing all right for somebody who's just had a bypass. Mm-hmm. The number of bypasses really doesn't matter once they've kind of cracked your chest open. You kind of, whatever, they're in there.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a rehab center, kind of getting her strength back and learning how to redo a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe going into assisted living in a couple of weeks. So... Mm-hmm. It's been intense.
Yeah.
Parents getting older.
Sucks.
It's just rough. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. You know? And it just keeps happening. Like,
yep.
There's no reprieve from it.
Nope.
Yeah.
So, it is what it is. Uh-huh. But when I was down there, so I wound up in Valdosta because that's where they did the heart cath.
Oh,
And when it was, we discovered that she would be having the surgery there, rather than drive the 45 minutes back and forth to her house. I just got a hotel room in Valdosta.
Mm-hmm.
And also did things like I was near a Target and I realized I hadn't packed enough underpants. So I had to go buy underpants. these things happen. And there's actually a wonderful group of soul sisters who, made sure that I felt well taken care of, even though alone in duress without clean underpants. So I do want to say thank you to all of them.
Some of the women, some of the mother runners you've met through the community or?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
That's awesome. That's
really
awesome.
Awesome.
Very nice. Very nice.
So, we're working through that. But on a happier note, I want to know about how your super duper duper long run with your friend Will went.
Yes. Speaking of male friends, look at that.
I know, right?
Suddenly I sound like a woman who has loads of male friends. So yes, so thanks for asking. So Will is our, to recap, to bring back the, you know, recurring character of Will. So he, and I stand corrected, he is running his first marathon on his 60th birthday, which is the day before Father's Day. Okay. So I thought three stars were aligning, just two are on the actual day.
Well, this is no good.
Yeah, right. Well, that's, that story's blown. So, but Will lives up in Seattle. And so he's following a train like a mother plan. And he sometimes will call or text in a slight bit of a panic about some run that he's nervous about or something. So I was like, hey, Will, what? And we love when Will visits, just the whole family just loves it. And so he journeyed down for the weekend from Seattle, which is a quick 3-hour drive.
It's like three miles.
Yeah. Did you know they were that close? A 3-hour drive. And so he came down on Friday night and I served us a good pasta dish and he was very appreciative of that. And so then we set off the next morning and followed a course that is somewhat part of the Portland Marathon course. And so we were doing well, and I thought he started out a little fast, so I kind of reined him in a little bit on that, and I had told him that we were running his pace. And so then he's at about 8.5, though, he had he was calling it a hamstring feeling, right, strain in his hamstring. He kept pointing sort of toward it, looked a little bit like cross between groin and hamstring,
right.
And so I thought, oh no, it's just way too early to be having something go wrong. I also knew that Jack was going to be out showing houses. He's a real estate agent, and so I thought, oh, the clock's ticking, like if we're gonna get a ride home, we gotta make a call on this right now, make it a determination. So we kept going, and just occasionally he'd have to stop to stretch it. And he really loved the St. John's Bridge, which is the bridge you go across in the Portland Marathon. It was designed by the same architect who designed the Golden Gate Bridge. So it has very beautiful neoclassical lines. And it's not orange. It's kind of a pale bluish greenish color. And so still stretched a couple times. And then he definitely was slowing down. And I have to say, it's unusual to run next to someone different when you're used to running next to a running partner. So I'm I didn't realize how much I'm accustomed. Molly has a very prancy style of step, very light and fast on her feet.
She's like a pony.
She is like a little show pony. And she has a very unique way of holding her hands in a very almost dainty way. And so the second I started out with Will, I'm like, oh goodness, he shuffles a little bit with that one foot and he leans forward a lot more. And so it's just like out of my peripheral vision, I could tell it wasn't my little prancy pony Molly.
Right.
You know, kind of the more Clydesdale-y Will, even though he's probably weighs less than I do. I mean, he's a very fit guy. So anyway, so I could tell that his shuffle, then again, fast forward to like about, you know, mile 12, 13, 14, his shuffle was kind of coming back and with a little bit of a vengeance. And so I sometimes do these active drills. And I think I've said this before in the podcast when I was talking about Boston, but in it, the guy who leads the drills is the professional runner, Dathan Ritzenhine. And he will say, oh, and you want to practice these so that if you need to change things up in a race, you can. And I always thought, well, I'm not going to do butt kicks in a race. Like, what's up with that? But what it means is that you break the kinetic chain that you're in, that your body is doing the same motion, and in this case, shuffle, 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 over and over and over again. And so I'm like, hey, Will, let's skip. And he was very open to the whole thing. I mean, he really went in with a great attitude. And so we skipped. And when we stopped skipping, and you know, I don't know, maybe we did it for 20 steps, 30 steps.
Right.
And when we stopped, the shuffle was gone.
Huh.
And so then a couple miles, you know, a mile or two later, I could hear the shuffle coming back. And I'm like, okay, let's time to skip. Because I just also thought, okay, I'm not going to try to teach him one of the more, you know, we're not going to grapevine. We're not going to do, you know, high knees or something that's really going to tire us out. So skipping seemed to break that kinetic chain just dandy. And so we were probably by about, though, oh, it was very fun at mile 15 right around mile 15, we hear this cyclist come up and be like, "Hey, what are you doing on the road?" And we both turn and we're like, "Hey, Molly." And she was messing with us, and she figured I had told her our route. So she, you know, it's a common route, but I think she probably was like, "Oh, maybe I'll see Sarah and Will." And, I do have to share a few tales. One
did
was,
she, oh, hang on, did she sprinkle change in front of you? To
oh,
keep you?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, so the two things that, because people are going to ask, I got to tell a story about change and about, peeing. So, you know, here I am with a guy, and so Will, within the first 30 steps, is like, "Hey, you know, I do this when I run." He totally does a snot rocket. He's like, and he's divorced. His girlfriend's name is Kathy, and I love Kathy. And he's like, "Kathy, it really bothers Kathy when I do that." I'm like, "Dude, I love that. I'm so all about that." So, so he was snot rocketing, but so I had stopped maybe at mile, I don't know, 8 or 9 and gone into a cafe and used their restroom. And then at mile 15, I was like, "Well, I sort of got to pee. Like, I don't have to pee a lot, but it would be nice." And so we had stopped to goo. And so there was a, a guardrail.
Oh,
and
right.
So I was like, "Oh, I've got a new way of doing this." And so I just positioned myself so that my bum was on the one side of the guardrail and my feet and most of my legs were on the other side, and just peed right through my capris. And the guardrail served as like a little, you know, barrier for stopping things.
Sarah.
And so this is when he's like, Will's like, "Right there, we're talking, we're gooing."
Right.
both of us were totally looking for change.
Right.
And so maybe a mile after the peeing stop, we were got to an intersection and there was a plaid pantry, which is kind of like a 7-Eleven or Cumberland Farms, and a convenience store. That is the generic term for what it was. And so there was a light there and I said, "Hey, Will, go press the walk signal and I'm going to look through this parking lot for change." So I do that, and he is very fastidious about throwing out his goo wrappers.
Right.
And so he saw...
One should be.
Yes. Yeah. But versus, I'd put another one in my pocket or something, right, you know, for him. And so, because my Saucony Bullet Capris have these lovely big pockets.
I love those pockets.
And so he walks toward this garbage can that was on the other side of a bus shelter. And as he's walking past the bus shelter, he sees a penny. And I'm like, "No way. You wouldn't have seen that if I hadn't looked through the parking lot. You ought to give that to me." And he's like, "No, it's mine."
Oh, good.
So then we run a little bit further. And this is a true Portland story because there was a homeless woman sleeping on the curb.
Right.
And so we look at her to make sure she's okay. And there, right next to her, is a shiny quarter. And I was like, "I get all shit." And so Will was like, "Keep running, Sarah. Just keep running. You can't pick that quarter up." Like, I didn't say it out loud, but he knew. So then finally at around, I don't know, mile 18, I found a penny. And then at mile like 19.9, I found my own quarter that did not possibly belong to a homeless person.
But the universe said, "Good, Sarah."
Yes.
Good.
So, and oh my gosh, I have to give kudos to Will because I stupidly turned off my GPS at one point at a light. And at that light where he found the penny, I was so distracted by the arguing over it that I didn't turn it back on for about a third of a mile. And then I'm like, "Oh, Will, I'm so sorry because I got to run until it says 20. Like, and I was like, so we debated whether I should run ahead and come back because his pace definitely slowed down considerably. And I could have, you know, added on a third of a mile and still not really gone ahead of him. And so, but he was like, "I'm going to wait till mile 19 to see how I feel. Going to wait." Cause I'm like, "Cause I really want us to finish together."
Right.
And at mile 19, he said, "Nope, we're going we're going until your GPS says 20. And at like mile, like 19.8, I start, or like 19 3/4. I'm like, "Come on, Will, stay with me. Cause by that point he was anywhere from 5 steps to half a block behind me.
Right.
And I'm like, "Come on, stay with me. We're going to finish this thing strong." I was just like saying anything that came into my mind.
Exactly.
Then
with
like, I don't know, 200 meters to go, suddenly a fire gets lit under Will and he takes off and it's on this curve. And I'm like having to sprint to catch up with him. We were just so excited and he was so proud and I was so proud of him. and we did the active drills, the dynamic flexibility before and after. And he was like, the next day, he's like, I feel so good. And he works with a bunch of runners, and one of whom was going to be a pacer for the 3:15 group in a marathon. Sure. So that means that dude can probably run a sub-3 marathon,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, easily.
So he runs with all these, you know, people. And I talked to him maybe 4 days later. He's like, I've been telling everybody in my office about the run and how well we did. And so it was very rewarding. And what I have learned is when you run at a significantly slower pace than your own, it feels really great.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, although there aren't many who have slower paces than me. I have done it on occasion. Yeah.
Right, and it was just so exciting to share it with him. And yeah. It was a great day for running. It was overcast, and the rain held off, and it was just. And I was actually feeling peppy the entire way. So which maybe makes people want to throw their phone to the ground and step
sometimes.
On it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
when I'm doing my 20 milers in prep for the New York City Marathon, are you going to come out and be peppy? Is that is that your plan?
Well, I think you might, you know, bonk me on the head. So
yes, my marathon mantra, shut up.
Excellent mantra. Oh my gosh. Well, there's no kind of natural lead in from our conversation about 20 milers into our topic. So our show today is about a topic I've wanted to cover for about 2 years, ever since I went on a group run with our second guest, Doa El Hagan. With Doa and our first guest, who is one of the founders of the Muslimas on the Run, we're going to talk about, well, running while Muslim, the practical aspects as well as the societal ones too. But first, we're going to take a break. Please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So I want to welcome Monica Wallace, who is one of the co-founders of a group called Muslimas on the Run, which aims to foster a strong sisterhood of Muslim women through movement. Thank you for joining us, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
So first up, please tell us about yourself, such as where you live, how many kids you have, and if you work outside the home other than organizing Muslimas on the Run.
Sure. And again, thanks for having me on the program. I'm pretty excited to kind of help explain Muslimas on a Run organization, but a little bit about myself. I'm actually a mother of three, mother and a wife of three children. I live right outside of Raleigh, North Carolina, in a little town called Cary. So if you're familiar with Duke, UNC, and that big rivalry, I'm all in the mix of that. I'm originally from Philadelphia, born and raised, and I relocated here about 10 years ago. And this is where I've made my home. I have two teenagers, one that will be graduating from high school next year and one just starting high school. And then I have an older adult, a son who has struck out on his own. And so I have two kids here in the home. Mm-hmm. By day, I work actually for a health insurance company working on a lot of managed care, healthcare regulatory policy initiatives. Mm-hmm. At night, I'm that mom and, you know, wife that many of us live those dual lives. But that's a little bit about me.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now that we know a little bit about you, can you tell us about your running? When did you start and why?
Absolutely. I began my running journey in 2012. So it's a very, I'm very new. I like to say I'm still new to the whole running world. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I never ran in high school or, you know, I ran around obviously as a kid younger, but I was not active in any type of organized sports or just physical activity for most of my life. Early 2012, you know, trying to lose weight and trying to really combat the onset of, you know, obesity-related diabetes is what kind of set me out on the pavement, picking up pounds over the years and not understanding the implications it was having on my health, you know, going to my doctor and knowing and being told that I was borderline, you know, obese and would have obesity-related diabetes if I did not really take charge of my health, sit me out on the pavement. I'm married to a runner, and my husband, when we met, you know, he ran probably about 5 miles every day, and I always thought he was just crazy. And the idea of running 1 mile, let alone 5 miles, just really, I just didn't think it was. It was just the craziest thing in the world. But I really, you know, wanted to see my children grow, and I wanted to avoid sticking a needle in me every day. So I got out on the pavement, and I started actually running with an organization called Black Girls Run. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, kind of other women in my neighborhood on the same mission. They have a great motto of the whole leave no woman behind. Right. So I didn't feel out of place. You know, I could kind of go at my pace and be supportive and meet other moms just like me who were, you know, some who were already active and some who were just getting off the couch. And I did that, and I began to sort of build these this bonding time right before, you know, the day gets started. We would meet early in the morning. And I actually enjoyed the social connection more so than I enjoyed the running part. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, you know, after a few months, I just kind of got hooked. You know, I really felt like I was having a great time, you know, meeting new people. And I also, you know, it was yielding results. I began to lose weight. You know, my glucose levels leveled out. Went back to my doctor, and she said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow, that's great. Yeah. That's awesome. So it's interesting that you bring up Black Girls on the Run, because I sort of wondered whether Muslimas on the Run was kind of inspired by that. And if you could kind of tell us about the start of it. And we know it was founded less than 3 years ago there in North Carolina, but it's already expanded to places like Atlanta, Seattle, and Detroit. And I'm going to just admit up front that, and I'm kind of shamefaced to admit that when I first learned about your group, I thought the word Muslimas was kind of a clever portmanteau of the word Muslim and mama, but then I was like, oh, that's perfect. And then I have come to realize it's a word that means a female Muslim. So if you could tell us about the genesis of your group.
Sure. And you know, Black Girls Run definitely was the inspiration for starting Muslimas on a Run. Being African-American myself, that, you know, when I joined that group and I began to, once I got hooked and I actually ran my first 10K race at the inaugural Black Girls Run 10K that they now have every year in Atlanta. That was my very first organized race event. And of course, I was hooked after that. But one of the things that was so inspiring for me was just not feeling like the odd man out, feeling, you know, part of a larger organization, because I saw other people who looked like me. Mm-hmm. In most organized race events, you know, the African-American presence, especially before Black Girls Run, was very, you know, few and far between.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So just seeing other women looking like me really inspired me. And, you know, it wasn't until maybe 6 months after I did that first race that I began to look for other Muslim women. Mm-hmm. You know, I was, you know, I wear the hijab, which is the Muslim, a specific style of dress that Muslim women wear, where we cover, you know, most of our body, you know, our skin is not exposed, our hair is not exposed. So even though I found sort of my niche or my home with feeling comfortable not being the only African-American, I still felt that I'm alone, and so to speak, because I was the only, you know, Muslim woman that I could visibly, you know, identify with at some of these races. So I began just kind of talking to people in my community, other Muslim women who, you know, have the sort of same issues I have. You know, they're busy moms and wives. They may have, you know, health problems that they're, you know, not really being very successful at challenging. And I, you know, began to talk to them and say, hey, why don't you come out on a run with me? Or, you know, I joined this organization. And obviously, Muslim women are all races, you know, all ethnicities and backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a large group of people. Mm-hmm. But the one common factor was, you know, by and large, you know, the dress, the style of dress, as well as, you know, the uniqueness that sometimes the Muslim woman faces certain barriers of just being out in mixed gender events, you know, sort of being out amongst large crowds, and sometimes not feeling comfortable, especially our place in the world with, you know, Islamophobia being more prevalent in the past, and Muslim women just not really feeling comfortable. So that was a lot of the initial reaction that I got from other Muslim women that I talked to, you know, about their hesitancy to joining, you know, some of these race events or just going out for a jog in, you know, in our neighborhoods. But I just kept persisting because I knew that part of the barrier was just seeing other people like you, just with Black Girls Run. So, you know, I would just say, hey, let's go out and let's go for a walk on the trail. It'll just be me and you. Mm-hmm. And then I would take a picture. Mm-hmm. I would take a picture. And then I would post that on, you know, my social media account, be it Facebook or Instagram, and just say, hey, you know, me and my friend, we went out for, you know, a 30-minute walk today. And just that picture was just so powerful at seeing someone else like you. And it began to catch on. So week after week, I would, you know, continue to meet with my run partners, and I would invite, you know, a Muslim woman, another Muslim woman. And then the next thing you know, more and more women began to come out. The organization itself kind of started by happenstance. So my intent wasn't to go out and create a different group or create a run-in organization, but just seeing it grow and seeing how many people just needed that motivation or that inspiration to get out there. And as you know, with social media, you can reach the world. Mm-hmm. So I began to get, you know, comments or inbox from people in other locations, you know, as you mentioned, in Detroit or in DC or in Seattle, and say, hey, well, I'm here, I'm running all alone, you know, I need that type of support too. And so I decided, let's go ahead and create sort of just, you know, a group that where we can give each other virtual inspiration. In some cases, we have clusters of Muslim women in large metropolitan areas like a Dearborn or a Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. In other cases, you may be in Norman, Oklahoma, and you're the only one like you. So I created the group just as an inspiration to give that those lone runners or, you know, small communities some support, virtual support. And then, you know, it just continued to grow into a point where me and my other two co-founders felt that we should really probably, you know, create a group and make sure that we're supporting the women in the best way that we can.
Nice.
So in terms of that support, kind of on a practical level, do you all go on group runs? Is it is there something that all the chapters have in common?
Sure. So all of the chapters, we definitely try to get together on a weekly basis and go on group runs. I would say here in the Raleigh-Durham area where the Muslim is on a run started, we do that probably, we are fairly consistent with doing that on a weekly basis. In other areas, it may be less frequent. It may be on a monthly basis. And it's not always centered around running. We have our group in Baltimore where they actually get together and they do a group workout. Sometimes that workout is walking or running. Sometimes that workout may be Zumba or something, you know, that meets the needs of those women in that area. In all of our chapter areas, you know, we establish, you know, weekly or monthly group activities where the local folks can take part of that. We also try to annually get together and do a national meetup. Mm-hmm. And that's just to give support to those folks that may, you know, they may be an area where there isn't a local chapter, but they still feel the connection to Muslimas on a Run. They feel the camaraderie, you know, that we hand out over social media. We try to kind of publish a race calendar. So for a lot of our runners that travel, such as myself, I travel a lot for races. So when I'm coming into a new city, we'll arrange meetups so that the women in that local area can at least meet with some of the members of Muslimas on a Run and get a group running together. But our national annual meetup is always great. It's a blast because it mm-hmm. allows people to kind of, you know, really feel that interconnectedness with the group. And it's obviously fun traveling to different places and meeting different
right.
people. And then just hearing a little bit more about, you know, what may be their struggles in their local community, which may be different, you know, depending on where you're at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So on the Muslima's website, the two rules of kind of group interactions are everyone is expected to participate and uphold a positive attitude, which is mm-hmm. a great rule for work or family life. But talk to us about how that directive fits into the sisterhood goal of your group.
Sure. And I think when we talk about my co-founders, Rachel Dan, who's still very active with the group, and another co-founder, Darietta Lee, who's since retired from the leadership role of the group, we talk long and hard about when we decided to formalize the group. I don't think I mentioned, but we had been running together, a small group of us, maybe 10 to 15 of us women, for probably about a year mm-hmm. before we decided to formalize the group. And we said, let's kind of, talk about what we want to get out of this group and how not just we individually will get something out of it. How can we impact our communities? How can we make this a beneficial thing besides the obvious benefits of better health for the Muslim community at large? And so one of the things that, and you guys know this as runners, runners could be such great people, and running really has the ability to kind of break down artificial barriers. You have runners from all walks of life, different backgrounds, different religions, different ethnicities, and, running kind of is that common thread. Even within the Muslim community, you have many different cultures. Islam is a religion that it impacts, where you have adherence to the faith from all over the world. So we have the common thread of practicing the same religion, but just about everything else could be different. Mm-hmm. We have different foods, we eat different foods, we speak different languages, we have different do's and don'ts in terms of cultural taboos. All of those various things can come into play. And if you don't kind of uphold that positive attitude and set that as sort of a rule up front, it's easy to, have those differences sort of get in the way of what we're trying to do, and that is build that sisterhood. So how can I make someone who was born in another country, speaks another language, dress, uses a different style of dress, eats different foods, how can I relate to that person besides we worship, the same God? What other things can we make in common? And what other, positive interactions can we focus on while we're running? So we, that's kind of, that was our goal when we stated out that we're not going to get together and talk about, our differences. We're going to get together and sort of bond on what makes us the same.
That's awesome. And you mentioned cultural taboos in that, and earlier you had mentioned about running in mixed gender crowds. So yes. could you kind of talk about some of those things that,
sure.
I think there are certain concerns for Muslim women that just your run of the mill Protestant white chick doesn't encounter when she thinks right. about a race she's going to run or what she's going to wear when she heads out the door.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's because of the multicultural dimension there and the, the way Islam, Islam is a pretty diverse, in its practice, mm-hmm. in that you have just this Christianity, you may have people that are, very conservative in their thought and their approach, and then people that are not as conservative. So for example, let's just take the hijab or the mm-hmm. dress. Mm-hmm. While there are clearly guidelines on what the hijab means or what the hijab should do in terms of its purpose, the way that's implemented could change just because you have people who, are very conservative, they want to wear the headscarf in addition to a long abaya, which is sort of an outer covering that comes, let's say, down to the ankles, where someone else may choose to wear, a shirt that comes to her knees. Someone else may choose a shirt that just comes to their waist. Mm-hmm. Someone else may decide that I'm not going to adopt hijab. I am mm-hmm. still Muslim. I still have the same, beliefs, but I don't adopt the hijab. And so being a Muslim woman could look 5-10 different ways when it comes mm-hmm. to people hitting the pavement. So that's one aspect. The other aspect, as you pointed out, mixed gender events, a lot of Muslim women who have adopted a very conservative approach to how they interact with the general public may not feel comfortable in a gathering where, they're running, they're, right neck and neck or hand in hand or not hand in hand, but, mm-hmm. elbow with men. Mm-hmm. And that is, perfectly fine, but everyone doesn't have that same sort of approach. And then when you talk about cultural taboos, if you're from an area where that is, never done, in some societies, some Muslim societies, the men and women have their own facilities. You can go to, I traveled to the UAE, United mm-hmm. Arab Emirates, and their facilities for for women are just awesome. You know, for every, you know, Lifetime Fitness, you know, you have a woman's side, you have a men's side. So you, I can abandon my dress because there are only other women around. I can feel comfortable. I can run on a treadmill. I can do head flips. But in our society, you don't have that.
Yeah.
You don't have that separation. So I may not feel comfortable coming from an area where I can kind of be totally free and fancy. And then now I have to worry about, you know, being in a crowd with men and not feeling as comfortable because I'm you know, I've adopted a more modest way of living. So those are the type of, you know, things that do come into play. And I'm hoping Muslimas on a Run can be just a unifying factor and understand there's a place for everyone in this organization. There's a place for someone who feels, you know, very uncomfortable and wants to, you know, kind of stick to a more conservative way. And we actually sometimes target women only races for that. Mm-hmm. And then there's a place in our organization for people who, hey, I don't care. My teammate, he's a guy, I'm high-fiving, we're running hand in hand, and, you know, we're just having a ball. So we're not here to really guide people spiritually about their personal choices. We're here to help them enhance, you know, their lifestyles without any discomfort that they would otherwise have in other settings.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you have a t-shirt on your site that reads "Pray, Fast, Run, Repeat" on the back. I am a runner who's continuously hungry, especially if I'm running any real distance. How tough is it to fast during daylight hours during Ramadan and log any miles to us? Or do you just not run?
No, actually, I love that question because I've just been running since 2012. The first year that I started running, I've been fasting, obviously, for much longer than that. And Ramadan is actually upon us. Next week, we'll be starting our 30-day fast. So the first year, just in terms of fasting in general, you know, this is, you know, fasting every year is one of our pillars of faith. It is difficult, as with anything where you're suppressing your desires, you know, your inner desires for a greater purpose. But it is something, like all things, that the body adjusts. And it becomes less difficult as time goes on. So for a person who's been, you know, fasting 30 plus years every year, for me, it is not obviously as much of a struggle as it has been. Now, the days are long, you know, the more activity you have, the more difficult it can become. The lack of proper nutrition can, you know, obviously make it more difficult. So what I've been trying to do even before I started running was really kind of focus on those other things that I lacked it, you know, getting proper sleep, you know, the night before, and feeding my body appropriately so that it doesn't go into this ravenous state, you know, the next day when I'm not able to eat. But from a running perspective, I actually went on the first run during fasting my second year of running. So that would have been 2013. And it was really a mind thing. I said to myself, well, you've never tried it before. Although, you know, my mind is telling me you're going to die if you try to fast and run. I said, you know, well, let's try it. And I actually went out and talked to some other runners before I did it. Other Muslims that have, you know, been fasting and running, you know, be it that because they're athletes. We have lots of professional athletes that are Muslim that, you know, fast and deal with this every day. So I just kind of went out and talked to some other folks and said, you know, how do you manage it? And I was given, you know, tips and tricks of how to do it. And I surprised myself that first year. You know, I just said, let me go out and try it. And I was able to do, you know, many 2 to 3 mile runs, probably an hour before sundown, which is you're able to eat and drink after sundown. Right. So I would time it so that there wouldn't be a long time between when I finished my workout and was able to eat. And that first year I was convinced that, you know, my body can handle it. There were no negative, you know, effects of it. So while I do cut back on running, obviously during Ramadan, I no longer exit out. And last year, Muslimas on a Run as an organization, we actually put together a campaign called Get Fit for Ramadan. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that campaign was to say, hey, we know we have to fast every year. We still have to work out and, you know, maintain our bodies. What can we do to prepare our bodies for Ramadan so that we don't go dark, you know, for 30 days,
right,
and we don't lose all of our fitness gains? And that was pretty successful. And many more women are out there now running and fasting at the same time, or at least adapting their workout routines so that they don't go back to the couch, you know, right, for 30 right. days. Yeah,
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So final question. If you can share a story of a friendship or a connection made via Muslimas on the Run that really stands out in your mind.
Oh, I have many, but okay. I'll just share one.
You could share two. We could go with two if you want. So,
I would say the first story I would like to share is a woman who, another Muslima runner, who at the time we met through social media, she was active in running, but she was not active in wearing hijab, and that's the Muslim style of dress for the women. And I would post my pictures, as you know, as I stated, of me running, with my hijab, and I would post them in different groups that obviously weren't meant just for Muslim women. And I had this one woman reach out to me. She lived in Houston, Texas, which, as you know, hot all the time.
Hot, yeah. Humid. Yeah.
She reached out to me and she said, how do you manage running in those, you know, clothes? Like, it's hot where I'm at. And while I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's not as hot as Texas. You know, let's just face it. Once you get above 70 degrees, it's all relative. You know, you're hot. You know, so what, be it 70, 80, 90, you're just hot. So she reached out and she just asked me questions, and I had the same sort of conversation I'm having with you, that about the body adjusting. Of course, it's hot, but it's, after a while, you know, you're not going to pass out. You're not going to die. I mean, provided you still hydrate, you know, you're not going to pass out, things of that nature. And I gave her little things that I did, you know, kind of putting together things to make it cooler for me, using sort of tennis skirts as a makeshift, you know, outfit that would still keep me covered but keep me cool. And so she said she would try that. She did, obviously. She was successful. She actually followed up with me months later to say, you know, by the way, you know, thanks for your tips. I just started wearing my hijab while running. My performance hasn't went down. In fact, my performance has improved. She got faster.
Nice.
And the best thing about it for me was that she said, now that I don't have, you know, I was able to do this, I decided to adopt the dress full time. So not only, you know, was she, you know, able to keep running, she decided, I'm going to wear hijab, not just on the pavement, but off the pavement as well. So that really was a heartwarming story for me. It was actually kind of shocking because I didn't expect it. You know, social media has the ability to impact people's lives beyond what we even think, you know, when we're having these interactions. So it was very, very powerful for me.
It also kind of speaks to the power of running, that it makes women stronger in all facets of their life. You know,
And if you have time, I just want to tell one more.
Oh, yeah. No, love to hear one. Please, please. Yeah.
My mother, who is also a Muslim, she actually started walking. She said, you know, this running thing, that's just too much for me. Mm-hmm. I'm an old lady. I'm never going to do that, but I'm going to start walking. And she said, I'm going to try to get some of the, you know, older women from my mosque to walk as well. And one of her motivations was that, you know, five times a day, we actually make prayers that requires you to, you know, bend and kneel and prostrate.
Right.
Similar to, you know, when you do yoga, you may see someone doing these, you know, moves. You know, Muslims, you know, our prayers require all of that stretching and bending. So it can be very difficult for someone who's overweight, number one, or someone who's just simply not in shape. You know, their joints are achy, or they have bad knees, or they're putting too much weight. They have too much weight on their body. So it's, you know, they have to sit in chairs to make the prayers. So my mother, she started walking, and at some point she progressed. I want to run now. So she would do a little run, walk, run, walk, run, walk. And while her group did not progress to the running part, she said after about 3 months, at least three of the women used to have to sit and pray in chairs could now stand up and actually perform, you know, all of the prayer rituals. So, and that was, And when she told me that, I said, and she actually said to me, keep doing what you're doing, because it's really making a difference. And I never thought I would hear that coming from my mother's, you know, mouth, who would say, would you stop running, you know, all these miles, you're going to kill yourself. So that was very incredibly powerful, and that was when I realized the power that, you know, something like Muslims on a Run can have, not just from a health perspective, but from a spiritual perspective. It can really enhance lives on multiple levels. So I was very proud at that time.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Monica. We really, it was enlightening and very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Doa.
Thanks for having me.
So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of where you live, how many kids you have, all of that kind of stuff?
I live in Portland, Oregon, and I have two kids, a boy in seventh grade and a girl in fourth grade.
Mm. Do you work outside the home? Do you work inside the home?
No.
A little of both.
Wherever the work needs to get done.
I volunteer a lot, but I'm not working.
Well, nice. Volunteering's work, right?
You know. So please tell us a bit about your running. I know earlier this month I got to witness you both before and after your first ever half marathon. Yeah, and we'll get into that in a little bit. So, how long have you been running? What got you started? Mm-hmm. Was it Cindy?
Kind of, and other friends. So I started running just a little over 4 years ago. And the reason was, I guess there are a couple reasons. One was I stopped my membership at the gym, was looking for a new gym, and started walking around because I always loved walking. I used to walk with my mom a lot around the tracks when I was younger. So from there, because we have some slopes around the neighborhood, so I started running down slope. And also I had my first smartphone, and I had seen my friends posting on Facebook through their running apps, like I ran so and so. So it just started like that.
Right.
And then now I think I'm addicted, I would say. Yeah. I just love
that's
running.
That's okay. We understand. Yes. So I am a runner who is also kind of chronically warm. And I was just in Florida, and the idea of even covering more than my body than I absolutely had to just makes me kind of wilt a little bit. How do you think about dressing when you go out for a run? What do you need to cover? How do you keep yourself cool? And just how do you go about it?
Okay, so I have been wearing the hijab since I was 12 years old, so that would be 16 years old. I know everybody now will calculate my my age, but that's fine. I don't care.
Both Sarah and I.
So I'm used to it, and I always think that when it's too hot, it's just too hot for everyone, kind of. And of course, I wear light, like cotton T-shirt and pants.
But so you definitely...
I have to cover everything except my hands and my face. Mm-hmm. So that's including head, hair, neck, and everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. And then what sort of fabric is it? Because I gotta say, when you finish your half marathon, you weren't like totally drenched in sweat. Like you didn't have... Like if I wore a headscarf, mine would look like a towel after getting out of a pool or something. Like why is it not like soaking wet?
Yeah, it's I think it's a mix of cotton and maybe some synthetic material. But the T-shirts were the tech T-shirt from one of the Cost Plus event races. Mm-hmm. That's the T-shirt I love the most. Which brings me to the tricky part: is finding a long sleeve shirt that's good enough for running.
Oh, right? Uh-huh.
Sometimes I have to do two layers. So I do the thick T-shirt, the long sleeve, because it's very, very light. And then I put like a half sleeve longer shirt.
Right.
Because a tricky part for me is also the T-shirt being long enough. Like kind of past the buttocks, like covering part of the hips, which is not easy to find. So.
Oh, that's a good
thing. Yeah.
And is that part of religion that you feel that way, or that's just
So the hijab, as far as I understand it, is not just covering, it's also being a bit loose.
Right.
And this loose part varies from one Muslima to another.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be the looser the better, kind of. But so anyway, so that's why I it's hard to find loose pants and kind of loose long t-shirts too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That could be a challenge to running.
Could yeah. you do kind of a wrap on your lower half, like wear pants?
No, I just found, which was very strange, a couple of long t-shirts at Nike.
Oh.
A couple mm-hmm. years back, and uh-huh. I got a couple of those because it's hard to find long t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So I wear them. They're half sleeves, so I have to put a layer beneath. Oh. In the winter, it's easier. I find some long, I would say, sweaters that I can put on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I would say for maybe for some others, it will be harder because they prefer to wear longer and looser than me.
Mm-hmm.
For
mm-hmm.
some, it might be easier because they might be less concerned about that. So it's like a range.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. right.
And then this is because I am such a heavy sweater. Do you keep a separate headscarf for running and then other ones? I mean, you're wearing a very pretty off-white one today. Yes. I assume you do not run in that.
Yeah, I usually wear the wrap ones. I wrap scarves on my daily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every day. But with running, I have sort of like a one piece that you wear, like it's easy and breathable, so it's different. Yeah, I wear different ones for running.
It almost seems like a buff or like a loose balaclava or something yeah. like that covers your head. It definitely looked, it's not as fashionable as
what you're
wearing
now. And you don't need
now.
Like any pins or mm-hmm. anything.
Right.
It's just, you just wear it and yeah.
And you're
it's
done.
Like elastic, so it stays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you still haven't gotten to the part about why you weren't sweating like a... You
know, like yeah, I know. I'm not sure if it's part of it, it's just getting used to it. I really don't know biologically what's, uh-huh. what's the reason.
And since we are talking about your race, tell us about how that went. And you know, spoiler alert, you were seen by medic afterwards because
yeah.
it was such a hot, sunny day. I mean, I was working a booth there and it was tough just being in the booth.
Yeah.
So do you feel any of that was because of being all covered up or that was just...
It was warm. And although I lived in warmer places around the world, but I don't know why running in the warm weather isn't for me, it seems. So I ran 12 miles a couple weeks before my mm-hmm. half, and I was totally fine. I mm-hmm. didn't even had a sip of water, but it was earlier in the morning,
mm-hmm.
so it was cooler. So I would say maybe the weather. I can't tell if it's the way I'm dressed or not because
sure.
I haven't tried the other way around, but I don't think that's the major part. I think mm-hmm. maybe I didn't hydrate enough
mm-hmm.
a couple of days before. Maybe just the, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe just the heat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean,
and also I pushed the pace. So I think the combination of the heat and pushing the pace on the race day, yeah, got me.
Yeah.
And so I think next time I have to just be more cautious with hydrating, not just the day before, maybe 3 to 4 days before.
Mm-hmm.
Watch what I eat. So, and actually maybe refueling along the race because I don't do that. So I should start training for that.
I know you indicated that you didn't take anything in. Is
yeah,
it? Yeah.
So
I'm gonna have to. Shake a finger at you, basically. Yeah.
I learned like beyond, I would say 90 minutes of running, you definitely have to eat something.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We
yeah.
might even say past 75 minutes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Where some of us who are a little bit larger need a little bit more.
Yeah. So well, good lessons learned then.
Yeah.
And then,
for sure.
I mean, you sat in the shade and we got you something to drink and it wasn't like you had an IV in your arm or anything
yeah,
like that.
I was
yeah.
fine like 15 minutes later, but thanks for hosting me in your booth. I felt like an intruder.
No,
sorry.
No. No, I was pleased to be a part of it. So then do you have another race on your horizon?
Not yet. I think it's going to be another half where I don't feel so bad afterwards. But we'll target a fall wintery one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a few of those. It might be a little cloudy, a little rainy. You can deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So after I first met you, I just kept thinking about how tough it must be to be observant during the month-long observance of Ramadan and to continue running somewhat regularly. So we talked about this with our previous guests, but you know, tell us what practices you follow during Ramadan, like fasting, and how it affects your exercise.
Okay. So fasting is basically you don't eat or drink from dawn, which is at this time of the year, it's like 3:30 a.m.
Well, that's the thing here in Portland. I feel like we're almost in Alaska in terms of how light it
exactly. is. And then all the way to the sunset, which is around 9. So that's right. exactly around 17 and a half hours.
But who's counting, right?
Don't want, come on. and yeah, we don't drink even water, because this is the question we always get. Not even water. Yeah, not even water.
Wow.
So it's a lunar calendar, so it shifts 10 days earlier every year. So in 10 years, it will be, I would say, 3-4 months earlier. So that's going to push it to the winter. So in the winter, it's very easy.
Oh, sure.
Because you wake up and have only a little bit of an early breakfast, and then the dawn starts. And then you even have to eat before dinner time, which is 4:30. So it's easy, perfect. Uh-huh. But then in the summer, it's just very long.
Yeah.
So I stop running.
Oh, you do?
Honestly, in Ramadan. Yeah. I basically stop exercising, but I just practice my life. So I run errands and I drop the kids and I work around the home. So, but I don't precisely exercise. Mm-hmm. This year, I'm trying something different. I'll try just walking.
Oh,
But then the past 4 years, as I said, it's just completely stopped running. And then I gear up again after Ramadan. So yeah, take it easy. Just go for a mile or two and then go from there. But then I think by, like, I would say a month or two later, I'm back on track. So it doesn't take too long.
So you live in Portland, which is a pretty progressive place.
Yeah.
But even there, have you felt any anti-Muslim sentiment or heard any unfortunate comments while you've been out running? Or do you avoid certain areas when you're out?
So honestly, I haven't experienced anything. And I'm not sure if it's... I'm sure Portland has to do with it, but maybe also the neighborhood that I live in. I actually get the opposite. I always get compliments. Because I might... I'm not sure if there are other hijabis running in my neighborhood. There are many who walk, but I get actually like, because I stand out, so I get strangers sometimes, like the bank teller or someone I haven't met before. Oh, are you the lady who runs along Saltzman all the time?
I'm sure people listening now are like, oh, that's her.
Yeah. I know
who
that is.
So, but then when I went to the coast, like in this Newport last summer, nothing happened. I just avoided. Like I was like, I had to think twice before heading out to run. I said, I don't think so. I don't think anybody knows me here. So I was worried. And I get sometimes when hate statements are on the rise, I get some advice from friends. Are you sure you want to run alone? I mean, the street. I was like, no, I think we're fine in this neighborhood. So yeah, but I'm not sure. Maybe in other places around the States, it's not as easy for other Muslims. Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, like when you run along the waterfront or something, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Monica was saying that some of the Muslimas are, stay away from mixed gender races. Was that the reason why the race you ran was a women's race? Is that why you chose it or no?
Oh, no. I ran the Coast Plus event
since
it started, and it's a mixed race. So I'm fine with that.
Okay.
But I can't speak of all Muslim women, of course, or all Muslimas.
But we would like you to. So if you could really generalize. No, I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
Yeah. So, and are there any other restrictions that we're sort of not thinking of or missing out on?
I don't think so. I think it comes to maybe preference, but I have many of my friends, they're not runners yet. Some just started jogging a little bit. Maybe they're on their way to be runners, but they walk and they join me on Coast Plus. We have a team of around 30 last year. Hopefully it will get bigger this year. We're supporting Islamic Relief USA, which helps in the States and outside with disasters and stuff. So yeah, they walk in the race, and it's a mixed gender race, and they're fine.
So what advice do you give to any Muslim woman who might be listening to, you know, about thinking about taking up running?
It's great. Go out and run. Yeah, I think it's, I think there are more Muslimas who run now. So it's, and hopefully this will maybe push the sports wear companies to start like making things that more suitable for us.
And are there any kind of pro-Muslimas that you look toward for, like, I mean, Monica was saying that she sort of talked to some of them and asked what they were doing or looked up online what they were doing for Ramadan. I mean, is there any, I mean, I think everybody gets really excited when they see someone in the Olympics, say, who's, you know, wearing a headscarf or that sort of thing. I mean, do you feel like, do you relate to them or just like, whatever?
Oh, no, I feel good, of course. Yeah, mm-hmm. When I see others. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, and I know this has been a long show, so I'll make this quick, but want to really encourage you to join Acast Plus, our new subscription program that allows you to support another mother runner for $2.99 a month and gives you special exclusive content as well as access to the complete back catalog of our shows, which means like if you haven't listened to like episode 60 or 72 or whatever, because episodes 1 through 100 are going to be behind a firewall, which is a fancy podcast term for you can't get it unless you're a member of Acast Plus. So to get this, you have to download the free Acast app. And Acast, in case you can't understand the word I'm saying, is A-C-A-S-T, like what you wear on your foot after you fracture it, say, for instance, Acast. And then you search for Another Mother Runner, or you can go to acast.com/anothermotherrunner, and that's where you can join Acast Plus, and we really appreciate your support. And to everyone, many happy miles.